states? Is it at the state legislature? Is it at the local level that people can be questioning their role?
I think it's both. I think that anybody that's running, the question should be asked. Are you in favor of taking some of the power away from police officials and police unions? Are you in favor of defunding the police, not disbanding the police, but, you know, squeezing some money from the budget here and there, like health and hospitals and everybody else have to? So these are the questions that have to be asked by the constituents before they go to the ballot box. And if you're not voting for somebody that got your best interest, then you're going to keep having the same old people. You're going to have rogue police officers, bad police policy, bad police leaders, and bad police officers rolling around in your community.
And I suppose the district attorney's races is another place to ask those candidates if they are willing to not accept contributions from the police unions. Are there other candidates as well that people should look at as far as their accepting of contributions?
They should definitely. That should be the first question asking somebody that's running for district attorney. Are you willing to not accept any money from police officials? That should be the number one. Like you said, they work too close together. So if you're getting money, we all know that politics is pay to play. We all know that. It's no secret. I'm not saying that it's wrong, but that's it. Somebody gives you money, you pay the favor back in the long run some kind of way. So if you get rid of that, then there won't be any tainted relationships where somebody's laying in bed and you thinking that they're going to make the wrong decision. I mean, the Pantaleo case for that district attorney in Staten Island to treat that case so mildly, like it didn't even matter, like Eric Garner's life wasn't worth anything. It was a tragic seat of justice, but guess what? He ended up winning the U.S. congressional seat a year later with the support and backing of the police.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have. Thank you, Corey Piggies, for being with us today. This is Jinka Soderberg with KBOO News.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Holla! Welcome to the Coalition of Black Trade Unions segment of Labor Radio, highlighting the works of the working class, by the working class, and for the working class, here on KBOO, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. My name is Tina Turner Morfitt, and I am a member of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Retirees Union, and the current president of the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. Tonight, I'm joined by my sister in the struggle.
Hi, this is Dr. Audrey Terrell. I'm the vice president of the Oregon Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. I'm also retired from the International United Auto Workers in Detroit, and I'm also president and CEO of the Dr. Audrey Terrell Institute.
Okay, so tonight our guest is Cameron Witten, who is the founder of a racial justice nonprofit, Brown Hope and Black Resilience Fund. Tonight our show will highlight the Black Resilience Fund. Welcome to our show, Cameron.
Thank you so much for having me here today.
So tell our listeners about Brown Hope and its relationship to Black Resilience Fund.
That's a great question. So Brown Hope is a nonprofit based here in Portland, founded in 2018 to help provide new solutions to racial injustice. The work of Brown Hope stems from what I like to call trauma-informed activism. With every act of injustice that has happened within the historical record of our country, whether it be slavery, Jim Crow, mass incarceration, gentrification, police brutality, every act of racial injustice creates an injury. It creates trauma. And so as we have conversations about how do we end police brutality, how do we end mass incarceration, we also have to recognize that the injuries of injustice from slavery and beyond have sent shockwaves through our communities, through generations, and we need to have programs, we need to have resources for us to heal from that trauma. And so that is the work that Brown Hope does, and that is the work that the Black Resilience Fund does. So for the last 2 years, we've been leading initiatives to foster healing for Black, Brown, and Indigenous people, that we can be accepted, that we can be loved, that we can thrive in this state of Oregon, and that we can continue to provide a leading vision of a better future for all of us.
So how did you come about the idea?
For Brown Hope?
Yes.
You want the skinny. I like it. So a lot of people don't know this story, but the nonprofit Brown Hope was founded during a very challenging time in my life. I was working my dream job at the city of Portland. I had the opportunity to work out in East Portland, which is the diversity of our city, which has the highest diversity of immigrants, of Black, Brown, and Indigenous people, low-income people, English learners, and more. And my job was to use my background within the nonprofit sector to help grassroots organizations write grants and get funding to lead community projects for marginalized people. It was my dream job. Unfortunately, after 6 months, I was fired by the city of Portland for being too dark and too honest.
Oh, my goodness.
And I remembered, it was such a slap in the face. Despite my years of work, despite the value that I had to offer the city, I'd been living in Portland for about 8 years at that time. And it felt like every moment, every day, was a slap in the face, that I didn't matter. I had no value in Portland. And I remember feeling like I couldn't live here anymore. And 2 days after my termination, I woke up out of bed. And you know how your brain can get sometimes when you're waking up and you don't control your brain. It has a mind of its own, a soul.
Uh-huh.
And my brain, my silly little brain, had this thought and said to me, we should have a Red Cross for Black people. And when I heard that notion, I said, I didn't even question it. I said, yes, that's exactly what we need. So, and that was the moment that Brown Hope was born.
So wait a minute, did you say a Red Cross?
For Black people.
Ooh, that's a great idea, yes. Yes, I love it. Yes.
Well, that is wonderful. So how long did it take you to put it together?
So Brown Hope was founded in 2018, and, you know, the thing is that the vision has always been alive. The vision has always been there.
Mm-hmm.
But we are living in one of the whitest states. We're living in the whitest major city in the country. Just because you have the vision, just because you know you can do the work, doesn't mean that people will believe in you and that you'll have the support.
Right.
And so for 2 years now, you know, Brown Hope has made an impact in the community. You know, we've been in the New York Times. We've been on CNN. We have shown people the way that we have built real, empowering, and healing space for Black, Brown, and Indigenous people.
Uh-huh.
But we've never had staff. We've uh-huh. never had a major donation. We've never had the volunteers that we've needed to make an impact.
Okay.
And that's all changed in the past 2 months.
So what do you think brought about the change?
Things are changing right now. Things are changing for many Black Lives Matter activists, many Black-led organizations who are seeing more people stepping up saying, how can we help?
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that at Brown Hope. We're working with a cohort of Princeton interns that have actually built a curriculum for our healing work with our Power Hour. The Brown Hope is actually the nonprofit sponsor for the Black Resilience Fund.
Mm-hmm.
We are now hiring 3 full-time staff for Brown Hope.
Sweet.
That just 3 months ago, we had nothing in our bank account. And now we're actually building an organization that can really provide vision that this entire country needs on healing from the impacts of racism. That's why we need reparations. That's why we need to be looking not just at what's in the news, but really having data, really having these scientific realities of trauma, and helping us to solve that. That is the work that we need to do. It's not just no more headlines of police brutality. We already know that our communities are experiencing trauma passed along for generations. That is causing us to have shorter life expectancies, that are causing barriers to employment and housing. These are things that we have no programs for, no support for, nothing that is culturally specific to the historical impact of trauma. And so that's the work that Brown Hope needs to lead in so that we all can live our best lives.
So literally, you're starting from the ground up.
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
Because of, from the ashes of the firestorm that we've been through the last 2 months, we are emerging from this with a jetpack. You know, we're starting from the ground up, but we got a jetpack on our back, and we are going nowhere but up.
Oh, great. So, talk to us about what programming Brown Hope, you anticipate with Brown Hope.
Yeah, so Brown Hope has two pre-existing programs. We have our Power Hour, which is the inaugural program. Folks might recognize it from its original name, the Reparations Happy Hour. That is a space for Black, Brown, and Indigenous people to build community and heal from the impacts of racism. We know how important it is to have community building. We know that the social cohesion of our communities in Portland have been particularly jeopardized and endangered by ongoing gentrification and displacement. And so we are building those spaces for community, and we're also calling for our white folks who have benefited from this displacement to actually be paying into the solution. And so we call on our white allies to actually donate so that we can provide a stipend of $25 to every person who's building community with us. And so we're building this space that is for Black, Brown, and Indigenous people, and we are making sure that they are receiving the compensation that they deserve for building that space, that new vision of Portland with us. And so that is our inaugural program. Brown Hope also has a program called the Black Street Bakery, which is a bakery that provides economic opportunities to Black folks in Black and plant-based baking. We've been doing that work for 2 years, and we've been on hiatus due to the coronavirus. Thanks to the donations that Brown Hope has received in the past 2 months, we now can hire a full-time staffer who can actually allow us to start back our operations starting in September. And so those are our two pre-existing programs. And our incoming program is the Black Resilience Fund, which we're here to talk about today, which is a fund that is here to foster and inspire healing and resilience in our community by providing immediate financial relief to Black Portlanders. Black Portlanders are facing the dual storm of a global pandemic and systemic racism. And we know that the resources exist in this community to do justice by Black Portland. And so we're here as a grassroots movement raising funds so that our neighbors have financial support and have breathing room so they can focus on living their best life. And so those are the three incoming programs of Brown Hope. As we continue to succeed in this work, we are beginning to do our advocacy to shape policy for the long term. We've already been advocating for innovative policies. We helped to pass the historic Oregon Cares Fund, which is a $62 million targeted investment into Black Oregonians and Black-led organizations in Oregon. And we're going to continue to leverage our network to be passing policies that are advancing the lives of Black, Brown, and Indigenous Oregonians.
Do you see yourself, your programs integrating, trying to integrate with the city of Portland?
We already partner with the city of Portland. So the Black Resilience Fund has a mutual aid network where we do food boxes, we do yard work, we do deliveries, emotional support, and more. And we deliver 300 food boxes a week to Black Portlanders that are paid for by the city of Portland. One thing that we've seen because of the pandemic is that food security is a crucial issue. And the issue is not, is there enough food? The issue is distribution. Is the food getting to where it needs to be?
Right.
You know, when the pandemic started, we had farmers who were literally killing cows and pouring over vats and huge cisterns of milk because they couldn't afford to get the product off of their farm.
Right.
So the issue is moving it. It is not providing it. And so we have volunteers that move 300 food boxes a week thanks to partnership with the city of Portland. And we look for additional ways, especially with new funding that is coming from the city's budget invested in the Black community. We want to work with them to ensure that it's going to support as many Black people as possible.
So do you have a specific targeted age group that you're looking at?
No.
Okay.
We do not.
So when you do your programming,
the way that we see our movement is that we are here for all Black, Brown, and Indigenous people from all walks of life. So we see ourselves as a bridge for gender, for sexuality, for age, for immigration status. You might be first generation African. You might be African American. You might be a Black person whose family has been here since the 1600s. There is space for all shapes and shades and sizes of Black in our vision.
Okay. Well, I'd like to remind our listeners that they're listening to the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists segment of Labor Radio, highlighting the works of the working class, by the working class, and for the working class, here on KBOO 90.7 FM, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. Our guest today is Cameron Whitten, who is the founder of Racial Justice Nonprofit Brown Hope and the Black Resilience Fund. So you said things have kind of taken off lately. Is that about right?
Yes. And we are just getting started. Murder of George Floyd, I'm assuming many of us who identify as Black, we braced ourselves. This is not the first time we heard I Can't Breathe. This is not the first time we saw a Black man's life being taken over agonizing minutes on social media and broadcast across the world.
Right.
Nothing was different about this situation, about the murder of George Floyd. And so when I first saw the headline, I braced myself for nothing to change. But we've seen a lot happen in the past 2 months that serves as a reminder that we could have been doing this all along and that we're just getting started.
This is Dr. Terrell. I just want to say, but the Black Resilience Fund, I am just so impressed. I've ran into people who have benefited from that funding, and I want to commend you on the work that you're doing. It's awesome. I know you're young. I mean, you guys are just getting started at this, but certainly you have our support from the CBTU and the Dr. Audrey Trail Institute. But I just want to say that people are very happy. I've seen them a check handed to people and the things they've been able to do. And I know you're doing a lot of other things through the Resilient Fund, but I'm just here to encourage you. This is wonderful, and giving us an idea of what to do with as far as people of color in various communities, churches, what we need to be doing. We want to thank you for that and taking the lead on just stepping out, and for God speaking to you about the Black Red Cross. availing yourself to go there and do it. And I know your Black Resilience Fund is still doing. I have some other goals you want to do, some other plans, future plans you want to tell the public?
Future plans. Thank you for that. The reality is that the need is high in our community. Black Portlanders are facing dual storms of a pandemic,
yes,
and systemic racism, and there is no other support. You know, at this yes. moment, the Black Resilience Fund is the largest single dedicated source of coronavirus relief for Black Portlanders and Black Oregonians.
Yes.
And so we've heard many stories of agencies and nonprofits that have told their clients to come to us for funding because they couldn't help them. And so we know how huge the need is. And even with, you know, our average award is $300. And even with that, we only have enough resources to help about 4,200 people.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've already received over 10,000 applications. And so,
wow.
We are continuing to fundraise because we know that the resources are there in this community, and we know that the need is great. And so our goal for July was to raise $400,000. We got a little over $300,000, and so we're going to continue to fundraise so that we can help as many Black Portlanders as possible. We encourage everyone who's listening to please find a way to dig deep and pitch in. You are helping out your Black neighbors. You've heard from Dr. Terrell the inspiring stories of transformation that we've made with a $300 check.
Mm-hmm.
These are folks who are not just getting financial support, but they are seeing their neighbors believe in them, and that
yes.
by itself is transformational. And so please go to the website, blackresiliencefund.com. Please find a way to volunteer or make a donation.
Brother Cameron, just want to be honest and straightforward. What negativity have you ran into? You're going to run into some negative, but be encouraged, my brother. Be encouraged.
So
you've
what I
negativity.
Will say is that, yes, we are living in a time where there is so much brokenness, there's so much hurt, and oftentimes, even when you are doing the most pure-hearted thing, somebody will have something to say. And I expected this to happen much earlier on in the Black Resilience Fund to get criticism, but it didn't happen. We have seen this embraced by white Portlanders. We've seen our movement embraced by Black Portlanders. But just a few days ago, there were some tweets that were made saying that our movement was acting too slow, that we were sitting on the money that we've raised, and that we should be doing things like buying land instead of giving it out to Black Portlanders facing a pandemic. And so, you know, to that criticism, you know, we just lay out the facts. The Black Resilience Fund was a grassroots movement that was started on June 1st. It was started with zero staff. We have no staff, no volunteers. We did not plan on raising a million plus dollars. And even with that, we have raised and disseminated over $700,000.
Wow.
To over 2,000 Portlanders.
Great things are happening. I am so glad. Oh my God. I'm so happy for you. I'm really with you. You are walking the talk. You're not just talking, you're walking it. And I'm just so proud of you. And I want to say something to encourage you, to support you. Anything that we can do, CBTU, I know, but Madam President, I speak for her and the whole CBTU for the state of Oregon. You know, keep us informed of what you're doing and how we can be a positive influence for you, because this is something that really has just ever been approached. And you're standing, young man. You said, I just love the youth stepping out. I come from the 60s, so I was fighting this war back in the 60s. Now, you young people, stand firm, and your approach to how you're going about doing it. You're teaching us. Make us get off our job and do some things to support you. I'm so proud of you all and the efforts and everything that you're doing. Continue on, sir.
Thank you.
So, wow. Throughout our conversation, you talked a lot about making donations or writing people checks. How do you distinguish it from being just an agency or program that just gives out money?
Yeah, so that is the excellent question. It really is why I consider myself to be a disciple of the Black Resilience Fund, because other organizations in Portland have given out $1 million for relief, for support, and yet people are paying attention to the Black Resilience Fund because of how we are doing it.
Okay.
You know, our vision from day one was not about financial relief. It was about healing. It was about resilience. Mm-hmm. It was about inspiring our community to acknowledge that even in our most difficult times, we can show our best selves and we can move forward as a community. That's the purpose of the fund. And we do that by inviting our neighbors to step up and show up, mm-hmm. and do that immediately for their neighbors. And so we're doing that. We have a culturally specific model where this is not a white savior that is marching onto the scene and saying, how can I save these black savages? That's not happening here. When a Black Portlander goes to request funding, uh-huh. you know, they get an interview with a Black Portlander. When they're approved for funding, which if you meet the criteria of being a Black person living in the 4-county region, you get funded. You get funded. And so when you're approved for funding and you're delivered a check, that is a Black Portlander that is handing you a check. We've heard so many stories of people who are born and raised here saying, I did an interview with somebody yesterday, and they were born and raised in Portland, and I never met them before.
Yeah.
It's amazing to think, with the impact of gentrification displacement, and despite the fact that there are all these other networking opportunities in Portland, the Black Resilience Fund is creating new connections that would not have been there otherwise. And then on top of that, you know, we've heard responses from people who have said things like, holding that check in my hand was when I finally could come up for air. And I find that to be powerful, to be living here in the middle of the I can't breathe era. Right. To hear from someone that we helped directly say, I am coming up for air. That just speaks to me for what we need as a country. We need healing. Mm-hmm. And we do that by uplifting our community, realizing that the challenges that we face are because of these historical injustices. So let's stop asking people if they're poor enough. Let's stop asking them if they're clean and sober. Let's stop asking them if, you know, they've got the documentation of their bills and their receipts and a lease from their landlord. Let's stop that. We know that the system's messed up. We know that the wealth gap between Black folks and white folks is 3-1. So let's stop with all the red tape and help people out immediately with as much money as we can.
Okay.
Mr. Cameron, please give us a contact number, a contact email address or something.
Please. The website is blackresiliencefund.com, and the contact email address is info@blackresiliencefund.com.
Good. Thank you.
So, Cameron, I want to thank you once again for coming on and sharing with us this brilliant Black Red Cross program that you have developed. It really
is the new nickname. I love it.
It is something that is not only that is really needed, but something that is really innovative. Because you're right, when people have a need, they do have a lot of red tape that they have to go through. And so, once again, thank you very, very much for following your dream and making a way for Black Portlanders to have some assistance.
Should I do the closing now,
yes,
Madam President?
Please, thank you.
The Coalition of Black Trade Unions meets the second Tuesday of every month at 6 p.m. Since the COVID-19, we have suspended face-to-face meetings and are utilizing Google Hangouts to conduct our meetings. So our next meeting will be August 11th, 2020. And our email address is orcbtu10@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you.
So join us in our evolving adventure of representing Black union workers. And Brother Cameron, thank you. We love you for all you do. You inspire us. Be encouraged, young man. Go forth. You are. I am proud to know you, young Black man, and what you're doing. And we'll continue to pray for you and support you.
And if you have a specific, if you have a specific event that you would like to advertise, please don't hesitate to contact us, and we'll meet again here on KBOO, okay?
I promise you. Thank you so much.
Okay, great. Thanks, and now it is the witching hour, and I want to say, holla!
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Está sintonizando la radio de KBOO Portland.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.
Good evening. You are listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. Tonight we are talking with Howie Hawkins, the Green Party candidate for president. And I should note right off that in compliance with FCC equal access laws, the candidates that are on the ballot in Oregon for president will also be invited on the show, including the Republican and Democratic candidates. But tonight we're going to start off with Howie Hawkins. Howie, welcome to KBOO.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
As you may have heard,